you ever wondered how a book becomes a movie?
Or how a movie becomes a musical?
Or how anything is adapted at all?
Join us as we talk about your favorite stories and all the changes that were made along the way.
But more importantly, why? This is Willing to Adapt. Hi, welcome back to Willing to Adapt. This is Eric Von Crumley.
And I'm Romy Reyes.
How are we doing?
I'm doing good. How about you?
Good. Happy Halloween.
Happy Halloween. Forgot.
That's the whole point.
That's the whole point.
We haven't had a Halloween special, I think, since the first season. So this is exciting.
It is, yes.
We say that like it's so long ago. It was just, we didn't have one last season.
No, I was looking forward to this one. This is...
Go ahead, tell them.
Today, we are looking at The Tower of Terror, both a movie and probably most remembered by, or most known by most people as a ride at Disneyland or...
Florida.
What's the theme park there called? It's not Disney World, it's...
It was MGM Studios, and then it was Hollywood Studios, I think, and I don't know if it's something else now, but...
That's right, yeah.
It's one of the different parks in Florida.
Now that you mention it, every video still refers to it that I watched as Hollywood Studios.
Mm-hmm. Hollywood Backlot, something like that.
Something like that, yeah.
Yeah.
One day I'll get to visit.
Hopefully not in summer when it's, you know, like swimming in the air, it's so hot and humid.
You have visited though, haven't you?
I have been there twice.
Wow.
Yeah.
Okay.
I went there once when I was a kid. I was about 10, and my sister was barely alive. And I say that because she was teeny tiny, barely born.
Oh, okay.
She said her first word there.
Oh, that's cool.
It was hi. Because everyone thought she was so cute, they would come up and say hi. And then one day we were just traveling between parks, and then someone said hi, and then she goes hi, and we all just stared.
That's funny.
But because she heard it so often, you know.
Yeah, yeah.
Yeah, and then we went after my sister graduated from high school because we made a big trip out of it.
Oh, that's cool. Okay.
Yep. And both times were terribly hot and humid.
Oh, summertime?
Yep.
Okay.
It's the cheapest to go.
I can imagine. I've yet to have visited back east.
The whole East Coast in summer is a mess.
I've been to Washington, D.C. once, and that was it. And that was just for a day or 2 days.
They call it the swamp.
Yeah, I've heard.
No, it's cool. I was very glad I was able to go on Tower of Terror twice.
Oh, cool.
The original, not the one out here that we don't have anymore.
Correct. Which I have been on the one out here. That one, maybe I went on it maybe twice before it closed.
I was so sad. Well, I'm still not over it.
Really? Okay. I didn't really have that big of a place for me because I honestly did not. I knew it was tied to the movie, but it'd been so long since I watched
and
it.
And we'll talk about that.
Yeah.
Yep. All right, so our special this year, obviously, is Tower of Terror, and it's one of my favorite movies growing up. It's definitely one of the movies that got me interested in that time period, the 1930s, and the swing dancing and everything like that. And yeah, I guess we have to talk about the attraction before we can talk about the movie, but is there anything you want to say before we start talking about the history of the attraction?
Nope, go ahead.
Okay. So when was, have you ever been on the attraction in Florida? I think you already said that.
Correct. No, I've never been to Florida.
Got it. Mm-hmm. Well, one day.
One day, yes.
So the attraction in Florida is a very interesting story, actually, because MGM Studios is what it used to be called when Disney, I guess, owned the rights or was connected with MGM Studios. And they opened the park in 89, and there really was like nothing there. There was a backlot tour and... the great movie ride. Other than that, there really wasn't much. And so they wanted to expand it. And they wanted to expand in the Hollywood section and create Sunset Boulevard. And they knew they wanted to create a big, like, landmark attraction for that park to bring more people in. And this is what's crazy. When I read about this the first time, I really didn't believe it. But the more research I did, the more I thought, okay, I guess this was real. Very briefly, there was a time when Disney was in conversations with Mel Brooks.
I did watch a documentary on a little bit about this, yeah.
They were in talks with Mel Brooks because I guess they wanted to do a movie with him. And so they had the idea very briefly to have an attraction based around Young Frankenstein.
Mm-hmm.
And very quickly they nixed that idea, and then they wanted to do something that was more in theme with behind the scenes, which is what the whole park was supposed to be about, like looking behind the scenes of movies and how they're made and things like that.
Okay.
And so they wanted to create an attraction that had the same feel as Young Frankenstein, but was its own thing.
Mm-hmm.
And so they wanted to create an attraction originally that was like an abandoned and haunted hotel that Mel Brooks was filming at. And so when you go on the attraction, you're going through this whole tour and you see a bunch of sight gags and things that are very reminiscent of a Mel Brooks movie, but it's you experiencing the behind the scenes making of his movie.
Okay.
In this haunted hotel.
Kind of like a backlot tour or something.
Yes, very similar to that, but funnier.
Yeah.
And like with a little element of creepiness, right?
Mm-hmm.
But then that kind of started to morph a little bit. They wanted more thrills, and so they already started seeing a lot of other places coming up with attractions that were like these elevator drop rides that and they were interested in that for the thrills element, and so they were going to incorporate that. And so you can kind of see how it started turning into this like hodgepodge thing, where they just kind of started putting things together from different places and seeing if they could fit together.
Yeah.
And at one point, Mel Brooks ended up leaving the project because he went off to go do other things, and I guess he decided he didn't want to do it anymore.
Mm-hmm.
And so Disney still was pursuing this idea, but without Mel Brooks. And so then they had the idea, well, what if we kept the haunted hotel aspect and the elevator drop part of it, but what if we just changed the theming? And so they slowly, eventually came up with the idea of what we now know as Tower of Terror, but they wanted to connect it with the idea of MGM Studios and this like behind the scenes like movies and television thing.
Interesting.
And so that's why they ended up going with the Twilight Zone Tower of Terror.
Mm-hmm.
And so in the late 80s, early 90s Disney brains, they thought, if we're going to connect this with that theming, then we need it to be connected to television or movies, and so they connected it with the TV show Twilight Zone.
Oh, I see.
And so that's why they made it as if the attraction was like a lost episode, quote unquote, of the Twilight Zone.
That makes sense.
And it's funny because later on, like nowadays, they kind of talk about how they kind of wish that they could just get rid of the Twilight Zone element of it and just keep it for what it is. But because the Twilight Zone elements are so ingrained in the attraction, it would be very difficult to remove them without coming up with something else.
I did read somewhere where they are still trying to figure that out.
Right, and that's why there's a Tower of Terror in Tokyo, Disney Seas, where it has nothing to do with the Twilight Zone.
Yeah, I did.
And it works really well because I've watched a lot of videos and I like it.
Okay.
It's more like with a curse in the version.
Yeah, but some billionaire and the tower and something.
It's
yeah.
fun. It's a good it's worth to look it up.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. But what is amazing about the attraction of the Tower of Terror in Florida, because it was the first one, right?
Mm-hmm.
Is it was such a high concept attraction and it was completely original. And that's something that you don't really see with Disney anymore with their attractions. They do a lot of attractions based off of their movies now.
Correct, yeah.
And for better or worse. And the theming of Tower of Terror is, I think, what makes it amazing. Like, there's so much work and attention to detail and things like that. Like, when they knew they wanted it to be this more than an elevator drop, so they went to Otis, the company who does elevators, and they I guess it's actually an Otis elevator that they work with in the attraction, but they talked with them back in the day, and they were telling them what they were trying to do, and they actually like took them on like one of their best elevators, and they showed them how they can get them from the top to the bottom as like very quickly. Disney told them, well, that's great, it's really fast, but what we want is we want people to feel like they're floating, like we want it to feel like you're coming down so quickly that the elevator is like in control, like it's out of control.
Mm-hmm.
And I guess they freaked out the people at Otis and said, That's everything we've tried not to do. So then I guess Disney came up with the idea of you're not free falling, but they have a pulley system that will pull the elevator down faster than the speed of gravity.
When I heard that, I watched the video and they talked about that. Mm-hmm. I thought that was interesting because mm-hmm. No one would think that. You actually, you know, well, we all know Disney and especially well done rides, you get wrapped up in the, for lack of a better word, the magic of it. And so to think that they're actually making it faster on purpose, mm-hmm. Faster than gravity, essentially.
Right, yeah.
Yeah, I thought that was really cool.
Yeah, it's a lot of fun. And that's why you have that sense of you're floating out of your seat, because you are.
Yeah.
If it wasn't for the seatbelt or the lap bar, you would be floating up to the ceiling.
Mm-hmm.
But I'll say this real quick before I move on to the story line of the attraction.
Mm-hmm.
For those who don't know, but when we had Tower of Terror out here in California before they changed it to Guardians of the Galaxy, I used to go on it all the time because I loved it. Because, you know, I love the theming and I love the time period and the architecture and everything. Even though like our version wasn't as good as Florida's, I still loved it because it was ours, you know. You know, it's like that thing where it's like, it's not the best, but it's ours, you know. You know, it's like family, you know?
Yeah.
But I remember my brother and I went on it one time. We tried to go on it 13 times in one day.
Mm.
To be fair, it was a slow day for California Adventure, and so it wasn't too difficult to go on it back to back.
I miss those days.
I know. But I remember it was later on the day, and there was like almost no line for the attraction. And so my brother and I would just get off and go back on and get off and go back on until the point where we're like, I can't do this anymore.
Mm.
This is, but
wow.
But
how many times did you end up getting on?
I don't remember. It was maybe 11.
Okay.
Yeah,
so
we got close. You know, 13 because the number for the attraction,
mm-hmm.
right? But by the time they closed down that attraction, because in Florida, it's all done by computers. They had updated it. So every time you go on it, it's not the same ride.
Correct.
So the drops and the lifts and things like that, they all happen at different times.
Mm-hmm.
And so you never really know the experience you're going to get. Sometimes it's more mild than others. But in California, they never did that. It was always the same ride. It was always the same
program,
lifts, same drops, all the programs,
yeah.
same the same. It never changed. And so if you go on it enough, like we did, you knew when each drop and each lift was.
Mm.
You just intuitively knew in your body, okay, I'm going to drop. Okay, I'm going to lift. Okay, I'm only going to drop a little bit. Now we're going to go all the way to the top, and then we're going to drop a little. Okay, we're going to drop all the way to the bottom. So you just knew.
Yeah.
Which is sad, but also really cool.
Mm-hmm.
And I remember we would go on it so frequently because, to be fair, my dad worked at Disney, and so we got in for free.
Oh, okay.
So this explains some of this.
Yeah.
But we would go on it, and my brother and I, we knew when the good drops were, so we would hold on to things in our palm, like coins or tickets or things. And so we would hold them closed in our hand until we knew where the good long drop was, and when we knew when the lights were going to be on. Because not every drop or lift had the lights on. Sometimes you dropped in the dark, and sometimes you were rising in the dark, and then you know, vice versa. But we would wait until there'd be a good long drop when all the lights in the shaft were on,
mm-hmm.
and then we would open our hand and we would just like watch the coin or whatever it was just fly to the ceiling.
That's cool.
It was really cool. And then even worse, I don't endorse this, but it's hard to explain because I can't visually show you, but what I learned to do is when they would come in and they would check your seatbelts, I would not sit up straight. I would kind of slouch and I would stick my gut out a little in front. And so I created room behind my lower back in the seat.
Mm-hmm.
And then they would check and then they'd be like, okay, your seatbelts are great. You're fine. And then the seatbelts would lock in place. Like you couldn't loosen them anymore.
Mm.
And the attraction would start. And what I would do is I would stick my thumb under the seatbelt and I would slide back and sit up straight, and I would hold the seatbelt out so it wouldn't tighten. So then I had a bunch of space between me and the seatbelt. And I'm sure I'm not the only one who figured this out. But I would wait until we got to the good drop. And then when we would drop, I would let go of this. I would like let go of the seatbelt, or I would just let myself float. And I would hold the seatbelt and let myself float. And you would actually fly up quite a bit before you would catch yourself. I'd never endorsed that, but
yes,
I did it safely. It was a lot of fun. It's one of the things I miss. I'm gonna get this out of my system now.
Yeah.
One of the things I missed about it is when I knew when you would drop to the bottom of the shaft, and I knew which of the rises to the top of the shaft had all the lights on, because then you could look up to the top of the elevator that you're in, because it was all wrought iron grid work. So you can see the whole shaft.
Oh, okay.
And so when the lights were on in the shaft and you were rising up real quick, you can see the whole shaft, or if you were dropping, you can see it disappear away from you. It was super cool and it was a lot of fun, but it's gone now. It's fine.
It is. I mean, the base of the ride is still there.
Yes. But what's really cool about the attraction is the amount of attention that they paid to the Twilight Zone show. And at this time in the late 80s, Twilight Zone had a resurgence. That I would say it was even more popular than it was when it first came out. It did well when it first came out, but then they, in the early 80s, they had the Twilight Zone movie, and then in the mid-late 80s, they had the reboot of the Twilight Zone TV show.
Which I think that's the one I watched. I know I watched one where Outer Limits and Twilight Zone came back.
Mm-hmm. It was probably that then.
Okay.
And that one did very well, so Disney was kind of riding on the coattails of that. And so when they themed Tower of Terror to the Twilight Zone, they kind of went all in. And they took archival footage of Rod Serling, and then they digitally inserted it with a green screen to their pre-show.
Yes.
And then they got a guy to come in and do the voiceover to sound like Rod Serling.
Yeah, I can't remember his name. Something Silver.
Yes, yeah, something Silverman. Like that.
Ben Silverman.
Something like that.
Mm-hmm.
And he did a good job.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you put him back to back, you can tell which one is which, but they do. He does a good job.
Yeah, no, I agree.
He gets all the intonations and everything very spot on.
Mm-hmm.
And what's even more fun is, at least in the Florida location, there are a lot of props that were from the original show.
I watched something. I know there's also one video I watched, and they talked about how, I guess, some of the original props they got for the ride were destroyed or damaged in a California earthquake.
Mm-hmm.
And so they ended up going to a antique store and getting some new stuff. And after some time, they had the stuff, some of the stuff that was valued. And they realized they had some very valuable antiques that are actually on the ride itself right now. An 18th century chair or something like that.
Oh, for sure. Well, yeah. Because they wanted to make the whole attraction feel like it was an actual hotel that had closed in 39.
Correct.
And
correct.
Not even just talking about the props from the original Twilight Zone, they have full-on antiques in the lobby and in different places that are period pieces. So I think just that alone is, I think, amazing.
But the video I was watching made it sound like that wasn't their original intention. They originally was a recreation of antiques until mm-hmm. the recreations were destroyed, so they ended up getting real stuff.
Right, yeah.
Which is kind of cool.
Well, it also goes to show you the quality back then, too.
Yeah.
So if you were like a Twilight Zone fan, it's really fun to go on the attraction and see all the little props and homages and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But jumping in real quick here, for the main plot of the attraction, for those who've never been on it, I'm talking specifically about the Florida one, so it's specific to that. But when you go to MGM Studios, now Hollywood Studios or whatever it is in Florida, I know so much as MGM Studios in my head.
Okay.
You walk down and then you see the hotel, and then you walk through these long, luxurious, overgrown gardens
mm-hmm.
to get to the hotel. And you could tell the hotel has experienced a lot. There's a big lightning strike in the front and everything.
They say the queue is the best.
It's an amazing queue.
Yeah.
It is a fun queue, and it's very creepy.
Okay.
It's a very creepy queue to be in, but it's a lot of fun. Like, it's such... The attention to detail is just astonishing. It's immersive. I love it.
Okay.
And it takes you all the way up, and you go into the hotel, and you go through the lobby, and you can just see it's like everything just stopped in 1939.
Oh, wow. That's cool.
Yeah, like there's like a tea set that was out that people stopped drinking, and there was like a chess set mid-game, and a newspaper that was splayed out on the chair, and things like that. Someone's gloves are still on a seat, you know, luggage is still around on a cart, you know, things like that. Like, it just looked like You walk in and you're like, something happened and everyone left and no one came back. And what happened?
Yeah.
Right? Mm-hmm. So then you go in and you're taken into a little library where there's an old television set. And lightning outside strikes and then the TV turns on and it's the opening to The Twilight Zone. So the do-do-do-do-do-do-do, you know,
yeah.
and then Rod Serling comes on and he talks, and then it turns into you're watching an episode of The Twilight Zone. It's supposed to be, like I said, the lost episode, right?
Yeah.
And it's, of course, Rod Serling going, Hollywood, 1939, amid the glitz and the glitter of a bustling young movie town. I know it too well. And so you're now looking at the lobby you were just in, but it's beautiful and it's brand new, and it's all these guests coming into the hotel, and then five of them, including a bellhop, enter into the elevator. There's like a dashing young man and a beautiful young woman, and then there's a little girl, and you're assuming her nanny or her grandma or someone, and then there's the bellhop, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they go into the elevator, and then Rod Serling, of course, hints that something's going to happen, and as the elevator rises, lightning strikes the tower, and then everyone in the elevator kind of like electrifies and then disappears. And then you see from the outside that the two front little towers of the hotel disappear, and the elevator kind of like crashes but disappears.
Interesting.
Yeah, it's, you don't quite know what happened. You just know that everybody technically disappeared from the elevator.
Yeah.
And then Rod Serling gives this invitation where he says that the hotel is opening its doors once more for you. And it's kind of like a warning to like be careful, you know.
Mm.
And then the TV turns off, and then you go through a hidden door that leads you into the basement. It's like a boiler room.
Mm-hmm.
And then that's where you board the service elevator. And then once you get on the service elevator, there's more Rod Serling narration talking to you from disembodiment.
Mm-hmm.
And you go up in the elevator, and then you see a hallway with a bunch of rooms, and then you see the ghosts appear, and the hallway gets creepy, and then the lights turn off, and it turns into like a bunch of light stars instead of a hallway and things like that. Like the window comes crashing, like in the beginning of the episode, you know, things like that. It's a lot of stuff that's very Twilight Zone-y, and it makes you feel like you're in that realm, right?
Yeah.
And so specifically to Florida, nobody else does this, and this is what makes it really interesting, is, and you probably saw this, once you go up to the next floor, you're literally entering the fifth dimension. And it's supposed to feel like you're being pushed into the literal Twilight Zone.
Mm-hmm.
And the elevator you're in leaves the shaft and then pushes through this whole space, really creepy, ethereal. And then it enters into a second shaft, which is the main shaft.
Okay.
And then Rod Serling says some dialogue where he says, he's like welcoming you into the Tower of Terror or something, right?
Mm-hmm.
And then after he's done saying that, your elevator goes crashing down.
Hmm.
And then, of course, you know, it rises, it goes down, and then it goes up to the very top, takes your picture, and then you crash. And by the time you're done, like, you're actually done, and then it does the same music, right? And then Rod Serling comes back, and he's like, kind of like, you made it this time, but what'll happen next time? That kind of thing, right? You know?
Yeah.
And then you exit, and you go to the gift shop and everything, right? And
mm-hmm. And
it's fun. It's scary. It's very very moody, and there's definitely a vibe with the attraction.
Mm.
Like, there's a very unnerving vibe the whole time you're in the queue, and very mysterious, and what is happening, and you just never quite feel comfortable, but you're always really excited, you know?
Yeah, yeah.
And then, of course, you know, the actual ride itself is a lot of fun, too. You know the gut feeling you get from the falling and the rising and everything, because it's so fast.
Yeah.
And it does a good job. So that's the gist of it.
Mm-hmm.
That is the Florida location. And it was the very first of its kind to do anything like that. And nobody's really done anything since, because it's expensive.
Yeah.
That's part of the reason why other... And then, to be fair, the fifth dimension... show scene, it does struggle mechanically a lot.
Oh, okay.
And so that's part of the reason Disney, at least that's part of their excuse for why they have not replicated that in other versions of Tower of Terror elsewhere.
Mm-hmm. And did you mention how many Tower of Terrors have existed, not how many currently exist?
So there was one here in California.
Correct.
Fun fact, the version of the one that we have in California, they do have in Paris, but... Mm-hmm. The version that we had in California was originally meant for Paris first.
Mm.
And we took their design. It just, it wasn't built in Paris until after we had ours.
Okay.
That's a very long story. And part of that had to do with Disney trying to revitalize California Adventure first.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
But it doesn't matter. So the one in Paris looks almost exactly like ours.
Yeah.
Or ours was. And so if you miss ours,
yeah.
I guess. I liked ours because I liked that the architectural design was different. Like I liked it wasn't like a copy and paste. And so like in Florida, it was very like a neo-Gothic Mediterranean vibe, which was very popular for the time period it was supposed to have been built in, which is like around 1917.
And I also heard it was also... They chose that for a secondary
reason. Yeah, I know where you're going to go with this.
Yeah, go ahead.
Tell me. No, you tell me.
No, you know the park better, so you would know where in Epcot.
So,
Epcot, I'm talking about?
Yes.
Yeah.
So they went with that look because it was very popular for the time period.
Mm-hmm.
But specifically, they went with the pink color, which is not uncommon for that architectural style, but usually it's more common for like an off-white cream. They went with that kind of pinkish-orange color, because... they knew that the back of the tower would be seen from the Morocco Pavilion in Epcot. And so they didn't want the building to stand out from that pavilion. They wanted it to blend in with the rest of the Moroccan buildings. And it does decently well in that your eye isn't distracted, at least. So that's what you read, right?
Correct, yes.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I mean, that shows Disney at least used to pay attention to that stuff. I think they try to, but I don't think they care as much as they used to anymore.
In Disneyland, I know they still did that one with the building of Galaxy's Edge.
Mm-hmm.
And it's my daughter and I are very, we used to have passes, and so we watched as Galaxy's Edge was built and how they seem to do it fairly well in hiding it and then blending it in with Frontierland going into there, stuff mm-hmm. like that. So I think at a meta level, there's
no,
still
I know
those
Disney
people there.
Disney is capable of doing it. It's yeah. just whether or not they actually want to invest the time and the energy
yeah, no.
and money. And because they've definitely, for every good time they've done this, I can give you a bunch of other bad times
I know,
that
yeah.
they've done this.
That's why I think like like because they're building a brand new land, they
yes.
thought about it there. But
right.
you're right. There's a lot of, Disney's changed, we'll
yes,
put it that way.
For sure. Mm-hmm. But that's okay.
Mm-hmm.
That's a topic for another time.
Another
so podcast. So I always tell people, if you want to go on Tower of Terror, you really need to go to Florida because it's the original and it's the best.
So the one question I have for you, since you've been on both, is what is the main difference? I know there's, of course, the fifth dimension between
mm-hmm.
and I watched a video where they showed how the tracks are different. And
mm-hmm.
in California and
yes.
Paris, it was pretty much up and down.
Mm-hmm.
And I think a little moving forward, but there was no tunnel
like, right.
that it goes down. So what is the main difference between the California and the Hollywood?
One of the biggest differences is when they built the one in MGM Studios. And I'm going to keep saying that because it was when they built it. When they built it in MGM Studios first, they had a lot of land that they could build it on. And so they weren't really concerned for the space. And so they were able to kind of do what they wanted. And then when they brought it to California and elsewhere, in California, we don't have space. That's specifically when they built Florida. This is a sidetrack here. So a little bit of history. When they built California, the park in California, so Disneyland first in 1955, and then they built California Adventure in 2001. Yes. And... and I only remember because of I'm equating it to my birthday and other things.
Oh, okay.
Fun fact, again, sidetrack. Disneyland was built on my father's birthday just 10 years prior.
Wow.
So I always remember my father's birthday and Disneyland's for that reason.
Okay.
And
cool.
California Adventure opened on my birthday when I was 8.
Oh, okay.
So my father and I shared birthdays with Disney.
That's just funny. That's cool.
Yep. It's kind of fun.
Mm-hmm.
it just happened that way.
Fun fact.
Yes, but that's how I remember. So when they built Disneyland, they did not take into consideration the fact that when they built it on the land that they built it on, there was nothing out there. It used to be orange groves and farms and things like that.
Yep.
But then as soon as Disneyland became popular, a bunch of that land got bought up by the city and by land investors and fast food people and hotels and things like that. And so very quickly, the land was being encroached upon. And so it was difficult for Disney to keep the rest of the land out of the view of the people in Disney.
Yeah.
And vice versa. And so whenever Disney tried to expand here in California, it was really difficult because there was no land.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so that was part of the problem with California Adventure. And so when they were building California Adventure, all the land that was California, that is California Adventure now, was the old parking lot.
Correct.
And so that's why they built the structure.
Yeah.
When they did. And of course, you know, they bought land and they did Downtown Disney and everything, but they built all of California Adventure essentially on the old parking lot, mm-hmm. which I vaguely remember from it being a kid. But
so, fun fact for me, when I got my first Disney pass,
mm-hmm.
the old parking lot was still there. We parked. We would park there. I think I got my pass.
Yeah, I remember taking the old tram.
Yeah, I think I got my first pass in like 97.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, so shortly after that is when
it started tearing it down. Yeah,
mm-hmm.
And so when they built California Adventure, they didn't have Tower of Terror there, and I don't know in their brains if they intended to always bring it or if it was like an afterthought.
Mm-hmm.
But California Adventure did not do well, and for good reasons, because when they built it, they didn't do a great job. I would say the better California Adventure is when they reopened it, I think, in, 2012?
Mm-hmm.
And they've already changed it since then, so it's already, in my opinion, not as good as it used to be, but that's me.
Yeah, no, I agree.
And again, that's a topic for another time, but when they knew California Adventure was not doing well, they wanted to change things and add things to make it better. And so one of the things they did is they brought over Tower of Terror.
Mm-hmm.
And they knew it would work really well in their Hollywood area because it worked really well in the Hollywood area in Florida.
Yeah.
So they added it into the back section of the Hollywood area that connects into what was once Bugs Land and now is what, Marvel Land? I don't know.
Something like that.
And
yeah. So
it was it was literally like the back corner.
Mm-hmm.
And so when they were building Tower of Terror and wanting to build it, they knew that they didn't have the same amount of square footage. And so that meant two different things. One, it meant that getting from the street in the Hollywood area into the actual hotel would have to be very minimal,
mm-hmm.
and not this big, luscious garden. And in my opinion, I think the one that we had is a bit more accurate to what we would actually have in Hollywood, even in 39.
Yeah.
But depending on where you put the hotel, right?
Like, correct, yeah.
But if it was in, like, downtown, there's no way you'd have that big garden.
Mm.
If it was, like, away, like, more towards, you know, Beverly Hills or something, then sure, you could have a big garden, but...
Or Hollywood pre-talkies.
Right, yes, exactly. So, but if you're in, like, a downtown area, there's no way that you were going to have a garden like that. But that's fine. So, automatically, you get into the hotel a lot faster.
Oh, yeah.
And so, some people have said that has been to its detriment because it doesn't allow the guest enough time to really get into the proper mood.
Mm.
And it feels like you're rushing onto the attraction. My pushback to that is the attraction is always so busy that you're waiting in that queue line anyway. But,
correct, yeah.
But yeah, that's neither here nor there.
Mm-hmm.
But they also changed the architectural style. And so they made it so that it was, instead of this like neo-Gothic, neo-like Mediterranean style, they made it more so that it was this, they called it, I think, Pueblo Deco.
But yeah. Correct.
Which I think is a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm.
And so it's...
And closer really to what a Hollywood is, I would say.
And I think they're both accurate because they modeled the one in Florida a lot off of the Biltmore.
Correct.
In downtown Los Angeles. And if you actually go into the Biltmore inside the lobby looks like a larger scale version of the lobby in Florida.
Really?
Oh, yeah.
Oh.
Yeah. It's bigger, but you walk in and you're like... Oh, yeah. Yeah, I can see how they modeled it after this. Yeah, this is...
We'll have to look at pictures of that.
Yeah, I'll show you. I like to go in there partly for that reason. But when they built ours with that kind of Pueblo Deco style, it was kind of like Navajo-esque, but also very Art Deco looking.
Oh, okay.
And I like that a lot. But
yeah.
And so like the lobby looks very similar, but there's small changes in the architectural style. But the exterior looks the most different. And one of the big noticeable differences you know, I mean, I know we're getting nitty gritty here. Just bear with me. But one of the biggest differences in the exterior, when you look at it, is the placement of the actual tower. In Florida, there's a lot behind the tower. Like, there's a little in front, but there's a lot right behind the tower, mm-hmm. and the tower kind of sits in the front. Mm-hmm. Whereas in California and in Paris now, there's a lot in front of the tower, and then the tower sits in the back.
Okay.
And so part of that has to do with the layout mm-hmm. and how much the attraction's trying to do. And so when you go onto the attraction in Florida, they only have two shafts, whereas we had three because they knew how popular the attraction was, and so they wanted a third shaft to allow more people to ride more regularly.
Yeah, more guests.
Which is a smart move.
Mm-hmm.
And so for that reason, and because we didn't have as much space, they had to kind of adapt on where the shafts were going to be.
So would you say they were willing to adapt?
Mm-hmm.
Sorry.
Yep, just a plug there. When you go on the one in Florida, you go in into the service elevator, and then over there it's only a one-story boiler room, whereas in here it was a two-story.
Oh, that's right.
Yeah. Yeah. So you can board the elevator on either the first or the second level of the boiler mm-hmm. room.
Yeah.
In Florida, it's a really tall boiler room, but there's only like the one loading area. And so what you would do is you get on the actual elevator, and it immediately would just go up in its shaft.
Because
it's supposed to be a service elevator.
Yeah.
But then when you reach the fifth dimension, it pushed out mm-hmm. of its shaft, and it pushed forward
into
the main shaft, which is like the main tower. And so that's why you start in the back of the building, and then you work your way into the front of the building.
And that's where the drops.
That's where the drops and the rises would be.
Did they have drops on the main and the original, the first shaft? Like, was there? Cause you know how they?
There's no drops on the first shaft that you're in.
Pre fifth dimension.
Yes.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, you're only rising in that one.
Okay.
It was like a normal rising and dropping, as if you're in a regular elevator shaft.
So I not remembering the ride too much. You had mentioned that Guardians uses screens. Mm-hmm. When it was here in California, did they utilize screens mostly, or was it?
No.
Okay.
A lot of it was very practical.
Okay.
So what they would do is, it's actually really cool, and it's the same in both parks, is when you look at that hallway where you see all the rooms, and there's like a window in the end,
mm-hmm.
and then the ghosts appear, right? And then the hallway turns to stars, right?
Yeah.
And what would happen is that was a projection. So it was essentially like a sheet.
Mm-hmm.
It's like a kind of a see-through sheet, and then you would project onto that sheet from the side or from above where you couldn't see it.
Okay.
And so the ghosts would appear as a projection on that sheet. And
Haunted Mansion type?
Similar. Okay. A little different, more updated.
Yeah.
But very practical. And it's not like Haunted Mansion, because Haunted Mansion, eventually we're going to do an episode on the Haunted Mansion, so we can talk about that. Haunted Mansion does some projections, but they also do a lot of what is called the Pepper's Ghost effect. And
I've heard the term, but I don't know.
The best way I can describe that to you, just in a very short amount of time now,
mm-hmm.
is if you've ever driven anywhere and had anything on your dashboard,
yeah.
and then you've seen it in your windshield.
Oh, okay.
Where it seems like it's there, but translucent.
Yeah.
It's because the way the light hits it through the glass and it's projected onto the glass.
Mm-hmm.
That's the Pepper's Ghost effect.
Okay, and this one on this ride is more of just
a projection
on a sheet.
Yep.
Okay.
But you're able to get much cleaner that way, too.
Mm, okay.
And anyway, so what they would do is all of the hallway were essentially scrims. And depending on the lighting, they'd be see-through, kind of.
Yeah.
And so then the light, the stars would be behind the wall, essentially.
Okay.
And so it's a lot of clever timing with the lighting and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
In California, I think they did it a little different, where they didn't kind of do that scrim appearance. I think they were actually just real walls, but then they had these embedded lights on the walls so that the lights of the stars would just come off.
Okay.
So it was a little different.
Yeah.
And so then you can kind of see the walls still more in ours, but it still worked really well.
Yeah.
But one of the differences for ours, because we didn't have the fifth dimension scene, but they still wanted a second location to go to,
mm-hmm.
is they added a scene that I actually thought was really fun, where you stop at a section where you're looking at this big mirror. And
oh yeah, the wave goodbye.
Yeah, and it's and you look at yourself in the mirror, and it says wave goodbye to the real you, mm-hmm. I think, or the real world, something like that. And then as you're waving, the image of you in the mirror kind of turns. There's lightning outside the window, and the image turns kind of ghostly blue or green, and then it kind of like waves, and then the elevator shaft kind of shakes, and then the whole image of you just disappears. So then it looks like it's an empty elevator.
That was cool.
It was very cool. It's very well done. I'm not entirely sure how they do it. I have my theories, but I don't want to go into it right now. But it was really well done. And then it would take you to the hallway where you saw the ghosts. And for me, I'll give you a quick fun bit here. When I went on the one in Florida, we went on Rock and Roller Coaster first. And I chickened out of that one, but my brother went on that one.
I have no idea what that is.
It's just another ride they have there.
Okay.
It had the music of Aerosmith and stuff.
Who are they? Just kidding.
But my brother went on that one, but I chickened out the last minute.
Uh-huh.
But then I went on Tower of Terror because I loved the movie, because I saw the movie first.
Okay.
But my brother chickened out Tower of Terror.
That's funny.
So we switched. But I barely got through Tower of Terror. It freaked me out, but I did it. And so I remember when they brought it to California, I was so excited.
Yeah.
I was like, oh, man, so cool. But one of the biggest difference in ours is as soon as you get into the service elevator, instead of just rising into the shaft like you would, it pulls you back from the door. And the way they kind of get away with it is they try to make it as if the door, the elevator door turns into the door from the intro to the Twilight Zone.
Oh, okay.
And so it just gets like thematic really quickly.
Yeah.
But I think a lot of people had issues with it because it was like, well, we're just on a ride. This isn't an elevator, you know?
Yeah.
But they had it. Part of the reason they went that route is because they don't have room in California.
So, yeah.
So
different mechanics.
What they're doing is they are immediately entering you into the main shaft.
Mm.
So then you rise up and then you go through the two little showrooms and then you drop.
Yeah.
And you do your rises and drops in that shaft.
Mm.
It never pushes you into a secondary shaft in California.
Yeah.
And that, you know, like I said, that was partly to get rid of the bugs in the fifth dimension section with pushing the elevator out of the shaft into the second one and stuff like that. But it worked in the favor to kind of do that in California, because by having everybody in the shaft, whenever anybody was not in the shaft, they would get pushed into the loading and unloading area.
Mm.
And then it would just go back and do it again.
Yeah.
And so you would do it and you'd go into the top loading area, and then you'd do it and you go into the bottom one.
Okay.
Like you would switch.
Yeah.
Right? And one of the problems I always kind of had with it in our version is, I'll just say in the Florida one, because it pushes you through the fifth dimension and you go into the main elevator, and then once you're done dropping, it like relocates you and it deposits you in a different area that you loaded in. So then you leave in a different area than you loaded in, right? But the problem was we didn't have the space to do that in California.
Yeah, I read something about that. I can't remember what they did,
though.
So
you load and you unload in the same area. But the problem with that is they don't want to put you back out into the boiler room.
Correct.
There is a hallway between the two doors, which...
Oh, okay. Yeah. I know, because I actually remember hearing that in the video, and I could not picture in my mind, what the heck are they talking about, a hallway?
So when you're waiting to enter into the elevator in the boiler room, and it's an elevator door.
Mm-hmm.
And the door opens, you know, ding, and it opens up and they invite you in, but you don't automatically walk directly into the elevator. You go through a small little hallway before you get into the elevator.
That's
which is
right.
Always a little weird. They try to hide it when you're loading by having it really dark.
Mm-hmm.
And so you don't really notice it too much, especially if you're just like pent up and you're like, oh, this is, I'm going to go on this ride, you know, but, but then when you're unloading, all the lights in the hallway are on because you need to leave. Right.
Is it the same way still for Guardians?
Essentially.
I'm going to have to pay attention next time.
Yeah. The layout is all the same. It's just the theme
Correct.
Is different.
But so. The hallway. I'm curious about the hallway.
Yeah, the hallway's all there, yeah. But that was one of the small things that was always kind of weird because they just didn't have the space.
Yeah.
And they had to deposit you essentially where they picked you up, but they didn't want to just put you back into the boiler room. So they had to make do, you know?
Yeah.
And, you know, they made do and it was fine, you know? But what funny story I was trying to say, though, for ours is because I went on it in Florida when I was like 10. And then when they brought it to California, I was, oh, wow, 2020, I was 11. So it wasn't that long. It wasn't that long after they brought it over. Oh, I didn't realize it wasn't that long. Whatever. It was about a year or two after I had been on it. So I was really excited to go on it again for ours. And the way that it happens in Florida is you have to go through the fifth dimension and then you go into the main shaft and then you drop. And so I was waiting for that. And so I'm on the attraction and then you're in the hallway and then it drops you. And then I freaked out because I wasn't expecting to be dropped.
Oh, because it was different.
Yes.
Oh, that's
so
funny.
I was waiting for this whole other scene and then and it just dropped me and I wasn't expecting it. So I remember being like terrified because it completely caught me off guard.
I mean, when you don't realize there's a difference, yeah, that's...
Yeah. I mean, if you've never been on the attraction, that first drop definitely gets you.
Yeah.
Which is, it's kind of funny because it's just the surprise because that first drop actually doesn't drop you very far.
Mm-hmm.
It drops you once and then it kind of catches you and then it drops you again and then it boosts you up to the top of the shaft. But yeah, I know it too well. It's kind of sad. But so yeah, there's just, there's a lot of small differences between the two. But that's part of the reason why the main tower is in a different location.
Is the story the same, though?
The story is the same.
Okay.
The story is the same. It's just...
I thought it was.
The story is the same.
Remember
they
it.
Use the same pre-show. They just changed the exterior in the pre-show.
Okay. Yeah. Yeah, I had vague memories of it. I wish I actually... Surprising. I don't know why I didn't do it. Prep for this recording. I watched the... video of the Florida one, even of the Japan one. And I forgot to watch the California to refresh my memory. In my mind, I was like, I've been on it. And then as time went on, I realized, oh, no, I don't remember it that well. It's been drowned out by the Guardians.
I know. But, yeah, that's the gist of it.
Okay.
You were a lot more interested in some of the details of the attraction, which is fine. That's fine.
What's part of it is because like it's so long ago. Plus, I think not just me. There's many of us who've never been to Florida, Florida parks.
Yeah, there's a lot of small differences. Ours definitely had its own identity, which I appreciated.
Yeah,
they did their best to use the space that they had here. I definitely think that the Florida one is the better one, but I liked the one we had, and it will always have a soft place in my heart.
Mm-hmm.
But, it's fine. It's the world's moved on.
California Adventure is no longer Adventures in California. Now it's about actually, how would I frame it? I think Tower
whatever
of Terror
sells money.
Was
whatever
there.
Whatever gives the money.
Well, no, it's more like what did Disney emphasize, the California or the adventure?
Right.
And so when Tower of Terror was in that park, it emphasized California.
Mm-hmm.
So it was the Hollywood land or whatever they called it.
Mm-hmm.
Now they emphasize the adventures that are happen to be taking place in California. I think California is kind of a poorly named park based on the evolution.
It's kind of
occurred.
A catch-all.
It is.
So part of that is because we have Disneyland, there's always this kind of battle with Disneyland because there's people who are always fighting to not touch it.
Yeah.
And then there are people who always pull the Walt Disney line of as long as there's imagination in the world and stuff, Disneyland will never be complete and stuff, which you can take a couple different ways. You can take that as literally or you could take it as metaphorical, but there are people who use that for an argument and that can be valid.
Mm-hmm.
But, obviously they do add on to it and change things. And obviously they've changed Splash Mountain and Tiana's Bayou Adventure, which I think was a mistake. But they also added Star Wars Land, which is... arguably a great land. I think most people like it.
Yeah, I know I do.
I struggled with that one for a while because they had to cut into the Rivers of America and I wasn't very happy about it, but I think that what they did with Rivers of America, I'm very happy with. Like how they
at least they didn't get rid of a Rivers
of
America. Like,
I know.
Yeah.
Florida.
Florida.
I know. Mm. But anyway, so like there's always this battle with Disneyland here for let's not change too much of it and let's just kind of keep it the way it is because it is the quote unquote original, even though there's already been a lot of changes to it.
Yeah.
And because it's Walt's, you know, like that's the idea behind it. And so anytime there's like a new thing they want to do, it almost always just ends up in California Adventure.
Mm.
Because it's like, well, that's ours, so we can just do whatever we want there.
Yeah.
That's kind of the mentality that it tends to come across.
Yeah.
So
that makes sense.
I like to call it the catch-all. Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's why I said I think back in 2012 when they redid it, I think that was the best version of it because it felt very cohesive.
Yeah. I agree.
And it felt very like a throwback to a lot of the old Disney, and it brought back a lot of old characters and stories and things that people hadn't seen in a while, and then the company moved on, and it was all about what's new, what's new, what's new, and so there you go. It happens.
Yeah.
But I think that's the... Is there anything else you want to know about Tower of Terror, the attraction, or...
I think I'm good.
There's a lot to talk about.
Yeah,
but
nothing else that I can think of that I have questions about.
Got it.
Yeah.
Right. Well, next time in this little series, we weren't planning for this to be two episodes. So next time we will talk about the 1997 movie Tower of Terror that was written and directed by DJ McHale, and it stars Steve Guttenberg and Kirsten Dunst. You're gonna want to stick around for this one because this one's gonna be a really fun one. What do you think, Romy?
Oh, I'm looking forward to it.
All right, great. Well, we'll catch you next time then. Keep listening.
All right. See you all next time.
Next time on Willing to Adapt.
Today we are talking about the 19-something movie, 84.
Do you want me to do it?
Yes, because I don't remember the year.
Today we are talking about the 1997.
Oh, way off.
American made-for-TV movie, Tower of Terror.
Starring Steve Guttenberg and Kirsten Dunst.
Fans of The Office out there will notice Melora Hardin in the movie. She played Jan Levinson Gould. And yeah, it's hard to watch this movie now after you've seen The Office, but a shoestring budget he had because it was a made-for-TV movie.
That's
and cool. So he got it all on that really, really long take the end.
Yeah.
He said by the time he was done, though, and he finally said cut, he only finished because he ran out of film.
Oh, that's funny.
And he said the dancers were exhausted.
I could imagine.
Yeah.
Some of the cheesiness doesn't come necessarily from the movie itself as much as it comes from more Steve Guttenberg, I think.
The spooky atmosphere. And I'd say the movie, if anything, is really suspenseful. I consider this movie a lesson in script writing. It's what happened. This lightning strike. Everyone, people disappear. Like, what is this?
Thank you for listening to our podcast, Willing to Adapt.
Please follow or subscribe. Maybe leave a review or just share us with friends and family.
We would also like it if you would follow us on social media.
If you have ideas for future episodes for us, please email us at ericandromy@willingtoadapt.com.
That's Romy with an I.
And remember, when the only thing constant in life is change, be willing to adapt.